But then I didn't know he was having an affair himself. It's not the way we live, Tella and I. We don't live that way. My sister, please, I need to see my sister. Give me a minute. Rising, Eve pulled out her comm, stepped out of the room. Do you know where Katiana is? Martella asked Rourke. Can we see her? Can we do something, anything? I know the person who's looking out for her now. He's kind. Lieutenant Dallas is looking out for her now as well. It's a terrible thing that's happened. When terrible things happen to those we love, we couldn't ask for anyone more capable and determined than Lieutenant Dallas. How could he do this to Kate? To Tosh? I didn't even ask. I'm so turned around, turned inside out. What did he do to Tosh? Did he hit her?
Has he hit her before? Rourke asked.
No, of course not.
A mixture of horror and grief flashed into her eyes.
I don't know anymore. An hour ago, I'd have said absolutely not. I'd never have believed it of him, even though he had a temper. And I'd have sworn she'd have told me if he ever had. Now, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know what happened to my family.
Eve came back in. I've arranged for officers to take you to the hospital. Escort you to your sister's room. It's the quickest way.
Thank you. I want to change. I don't want to go to Tosh dressed for a party. It feels wrong. I want to go see Kate's mother as soon as I can. Am I allowed to do that?
Of course.
And Stephen? Stephen Dorchester, the man she's been seeing. Does he know what happened?
I can have that taken care of.
They were in love. Just the lovely beginning of it. She was happy. And she was so worked up about their date tonight.
How? Worked up how?
Oh, just in a hurry to get home, get ready. She just seemed worked up about it all of a sudden. Distracted. Excuse me, please. I need to change. I need to get to Tosh.
When she hurried out, Eve turned to Schubert. Did you notice this distraction? I did, now that you mention it. I wish I'd paid more attention. I suppose that's always the way. You always think, oh, we'll talk about that tomorrow. And then... I don't want Tella to be alone. We'll let ourselves out, Rourke told him. Gotta get this down, Eve said when they went back outside. Need to work it around, sort it out. Sorted. It's a good word. Also convoluted. Do you still want to go by the morgue? Yeah, I need to do that. And I need to get this down. Do that. I'm driving. He left her to her notes, her muttering, her short periods of silence, eyes closed, then more notes and muttering. When I was a kid, she said abruptly, in the whole foster state school cycle, I sometimes wished I had a sibling. Did you ever? I had my mates. That was family for me. Mates. You think of that word first as lovers, that two-person connection. But it's a good word for friends when you mean it. My sense is Tella and Katiana were mates. She loves her sister, feels close to her, but for the deep and down, she'd turn to the mate. She'd have told Katiana about what happened with Ziegler before she told her sister. And here's what else. Neither of them much like Copley. They'd golf with him, hang out, go to parties, have family deals, but neither of them would have considered confiding in him. They wouldn't have trusted him to keep a confidence. And it irked them. He treated Katiana like a servant, but they sucked it up, mostly for the sister's sake. And still, she said when they arrived at the morgue, both of them claim, with apparent sincerity, they can't conceive of Copley hurting anyone. I think, Speaking of general population and not cops or me, most can't conceive of someone they know well or family with killing anyone. A lot of the general population are wrong. Eve strode briskly through the tunnel and through the double doors of Morris's room. He wore a clear protective cape over a steel blue suit with steel gray chalk stripes, a braided tie that twined the two tones. His dark hair slicked into three slim stacked tails. He sat at a counter working at a comp while some sort of hymn soared through his music system like angel wings.
Sorry to pull you in.
Don't be. The nights are long. Work shortens them. And her nights? He rose, walked to where Katiana lay on a slab. Are over. Filling in for Peabody? He asked Rourke with a faint smile.
I am.
I spoke with our favorite detective shortly ago. Katiana's family is coming in soon. They don't want to wait to see her until tomorrow. I've enough time to soften the worst. He indicated the head gash. She has no other injuries to speak of. The fall broke her nose, and as you can see, there's some minor lacerations, contusions on her knees, forearms.
They would have been incurred in the fall.
She went down hard. The depth of the wound would indicate considerable force. The secondary wounds on her limbs, she didn't have time to brace for the fall, to try to catch herself. She fell face first, striking a solid edge.
Marble hearth.
Yes. Tripped or shoved? It can be both. A slip's unlikely. Unless she's been impaired in some way, and I found no illegals or alcohol in the blood. She should have attempted to catch herself. Her palms would show some impact. Again, the depth and width of the gash indicate force. I'd speculate she was shoved from behind, lost her footing. She was wearing those high, skinny heels. Harder to regain balance, as heels, by construction, leaned the body forward. She went down hard and fast, and had the very bad luck to have a marble ledge in the way of the fall. You won't get murder one on her. I found no sign of offensive or defensive wounds other than what I've told you.
No, I know it. Murder two's enough. Still, are you sure about her being shoved from behind?
Highest probability, given the angle of the wound, the lack of other injuries to the body.
She turned her back on him.
Maybe walking away? Except the fireplace is on the other side of the room from the doorway to the foyer.
But she turned her back.
Pacing.
Eve glanced at Rourke.
What?
Pacing.
You do that when you're thinking or upset. Stride away, back and away.
Huh?
Yeah. She was upset. Had gone there without telling her boss and friend.
Distracted.
Got a date with the guy she's in love with, but upset and distracted enough to stop off there first. Talking, pacing, and telling him, speculatively, something she's figured out or knows that could implicate him with Ziegler. That's what plays for me. And, like with Ziegler, he goes with the raging impulse of the moment. In this case, he pushes her. She falls hard and fast, and she's dead. Blood coming fast, too. Head wound, you always get plenty of blood.
Eve paced now, and the act of it made Rourke smile.
He left the room. Had to leave the room, or the wife would never have gotten so far on the 911 call.
Does he hear her?
Maybe she screamed. People do when they walk in on blood and a body. So he rushes back in, sees her, and that rage is still pumping, so he goes after her.
It's what plays.
And fairly tidily, Morris commented.
Yeah, it's the fairly I have to eliminate.
It's going to be difficult for her family.
The holidays. Difficult enough, Morris continued, to get through holidays after a loss. But when the loss is so closely connected to them, harder still.
Hesitating, Eve slipped her hands into her pockets.
If they have any questions, you can tell them to contact me.
I will, but I should be able to answer most.
Okay, well, listen, if you don't have any plans for Christmas, you could hang with us. Morris looked at her. His eyes darkened a moment, a war of emotions. Then he crossed to her. You won't mind, he said to Rourke, and laying his hands on Eve's shoulders, kissed her cheeks, one, then the other.
You don't need to worry about me.
It's not that. It's just, we're pretty loose that day.
Depending.
Right, she said, appealing to Rourke.
We are.
And no, he said to Morris, I don't mind at all.
I'm spending the day with my parents and some other family. I plan to leave tomorrow, early afternoon, if possible.
Good. That's good. Eve left her hands in her pockets, not sure what else to do with them.
Have a good one, Morris. And you. Both of you.
He looked back at Katiana.
And we'll all do our best by her.
She worked on the drive home. She'd forgotten about dinner, Rourke thought, but he'd see she got food, even if it was that slice of pizza once they were home.
He found he wanted home.
Symbol and sanctuary. So much loss in one night, so much rage and grief, and all, from what he could see, generated from one man. Trey Ziegler's greed had spread ripples of betrayal, fear, blood, and murder. Lost trust, lost love, lost joy, lost life. So he wanted home, even though those losses would follow them. Mira reports severe anxiety attack as believed. No other issues, and no reason Copley can't be interviewed tomorrow. She frowned as they wound up the drive. The lawyer will try to block. I may need to pull Rio in, block the block. I want to finish that fucker off. Check on Quigley, because I want to talk to her first thing in the morning, toss whatever she tells me at Copley. She got out of the car, looked up at the sky for a moment. No stars, she noted. No moon. A cold rain was coming. If they hadn't had sex, they'd have been gone when we got there. Had another few hours without knowing they'd lost someone they loved. The Schuberts.
I'm aware.
The grief would still come, Eve, inevitably. And the fact they'd been together shows they're not letting what happened with Ziegler divide them, mar their relationship. They'll get through this easier because they're together. She's disappointed in her sister, Eve added as they went inside, started up.
She won't let it get in the way, or not for long.
But she's disappointed, not just because Quigley didn't tell her she'd paid Ziegler for sex, but because Quigley cheated on Copley. She doesn't have much respect for Copley under it all, but my sense is she has a lot for marriage, for the promises made. And Quigley doesn't. The second time, we know of, she's cheated. She doesn't deserve to get her head bashed in over it, but she doesn't earn a lot of respect either. In her office, still wearing her coat, she walked around her board. If she'd been straight with me from the start, maybe things wouldn't be as bad as they are. Maybe I wouldn't be moving Katiana's photo to victim status, and she wouldn't be in the hospital. Martella might come to think that, and if she does, it's going to crack their relationship, too. Fucking sex and money, she muttered.
both of which can be enormous pluses, as well as motives for murder.
We need to eat.
What?
Oh, we were going to stop for a slice.
We forgot.
You may have, but I thought we'd have it here at home.
Even better.
She'd hauled him all over the city, she thought, looking at death.
I'll get it. Deal with Rio, set up your block with our favorite APA. I'll take care of it.
Rourke, a whole shitload of things are better because we're together.
Truer words, he said, and went into the kitchen.
She ate. She contacted Rio, talked to Peabody, checked on Quigley's status, stable, still out, sister and brother-in-law by her side, checked on Copley, sedated in a cage. After another review of her notes, she streamlined a report. She studied her board, ran probabilities, and to eliminate any possibilities, took a good look at Katiana Dubois's financials. Pretty generous salary to her mind, but probably not out of line considering who she worked for and their relationship. Lived within her means, saved up for rainy days. Why did rainy days require more money than dry ones, she wondered. Really, how much did an umbrella cost? When her mind wandered, she pulled it in again, rubbed the back of her aching neck. She had Copley. She had him cold, but it all just nagged at her. Ziegler to Quigley, sex for money. To Copley, money for silence. Then to Martella. Was that Ziegler's shot at Copley, or just another conquest? Why do the sister of a paying client? Had he just been that arrogant? Not impossible.
He'd hit on Katiana, too, a close family connection.
She shut her eyes, tried to work through it. The next thing she knew, Rourke was carrying her out of the office.
I'm awake! I'm awake!
You weren't. Give it a rest.
I was working stuff out.
He hit on all the women, the Quigley connection women.
Was it to give Copley a jab?
Sure, you take me golfing at the club, but you make sure I know I'm the help. Guess what, fucker? I'm doing your wife. I did your sister-in-law. I'd do your sister-in-law's best pal, but she's a lesbian. Except not.
Katiana's connected to both. I checked her financials, but maybe
no other accounts, no secret money hidden away, I looked.
You did?
I did.
He set her on the bed. Anticipating you.
Oh.
She watched him with sleepy affection as he took off her boots. It didn't feel right anyway, but you've got to think about it. Suspicious minds do, which equal yours and mine. Now, we're both going to turn off those suspicious minds so we can put them to work for us tomorrow. She peeled off her clothes. Didn't bother with a nightshirt. That took too much energy.
Do you need a suspicious one tomorrow?
I need one every day. Yours and mine, he repeated, and slid in beside her.
It's after midnight.
Well after.
So it's Christmas Eve.
It is indeed. I'm going to wrap this up by tomorrow afternoon. Then we'll have ours, right?
We'll have ours.
When she stroked his cheek, he drew her in and, knowing how to lull her, rubbed her back lightly until she dropped away.
They'd have theirs, he thought. But for a moment he saw Katiana lying in her own blood. Others, no matter the justice, would grieve. He pressed his lips to Eve's hair, drew in her scent, and let it lull him to sleep as well.
Chapter 21. In the morning, Eve got out early, and still the traffic was vicious. The cold rain came, as predicted, and brought a bonus round of icy sleet that sizzled like frying meat when it hit the pavement and slicked the roads. She watched a guy, she assumed male, though he was wrapped up like an Arctic explorer in a hooded parka, make a dash for a glide cart, slip and land solidly on his back, where he wobbled like an upturned turtle. While the cart vendor, probably sensing a sale, clomped over to help him up, a skinny guy wearing a grimy cap with grimier ear flaps reached into the cart and helped himself to some bags of chips and a soft pretzel he shoved into the pockets of his even grimier trench coat. Spotting the thief, the vendor gave chase, dropping the Arctic guy so he once again wobbled and flopped. The short vignette on street life entertained her during the red light. She watched people slip and slide, cars fishtail as they took a turn too fast, listened to the harsh music of horns blasting when other vehicles didn't move fast enough to suit. Overhead, overall, an ad blimp blasted frantically through the dull gray sky, announcing the last chance, the final hours, so that Christmas Eve in New York took on the aura of the apocalypse. Since the weather seriously sucked, and Peabody's apartment was nearly on the way to the hospital, Eve arranged to pick up her partner. 5 minutes out, she sent Peabody a text. "Pulling up in 5. I wait. You walk." When she did pull up, she glanced up at her old apartment windows, currently Mavis and family's windows, and found them outlined with festive green and red lights. They shined happily against the cold gray rain. She imagined them up there, maybe dealing with breakfast, the kid jabbering, Mavis laughing, Leonardo beaming at his girls. They'd carved out a good life, she mused. A colorful one by anyone's standards, but a good, solid life. Who'd have thought, only a few Christmases ago, either of them would have a real home and all that went with it? Even as she thought it, she spotted Leonardo at one of the lighted windows. Hard to miss, with his big frame draped in a robe swirled with psychotic rainbow ribbons. On his hip, Bella, all sunshine curls, bounced, and yes, jabbered. Mavis slipped into view, and under Leonardo's free arm. Nice, Eve thought. A nice little scene of home life in what had once been little more than a place to work and sleep. Then she watched another scene as Peabody came out. Strutted out, Eve thought. Oh, Jesus, what had they done? Pink coat, pink boots, a multicolored cap, heavy on the pink, with a fuzzy pink ball on top. Peabody got in the car with a whoosh of cold air and rain. It could snow. They're saying no way, but I think maybe. Wouldn't it be sweet if it snowed? Even though we're heading out tonight, it would be sweet. You're not allowed to strut. Huh? You can walk, Eve continued as she pulled away from the curb. You can stride or clomp. You can run in pursuit. You can hobble if wounded. In certain circumstances, you can stroll, but you are not allowed to strut. Cops don't strut.
I was strutting?
You look like some sort of pink candy with a fuzzy ball on top. Strutting pink candy. The strutting ceases immediately. Pink candy. Instead of the insult Eve intended, Peabody appeared pleased.
I love my coat. Love, love my pink magic coat. It makes me feel pretty, sexy and strong and styling. Therefore, I strut.
Well, stop it or... Crap. Is that drunk Santa currently mooning passing traffic?
Wow. That's some ugly ass he's got there.
It is drunk Santa. Oh, please, do we have to stop? Think of the smell. Fear it. We can't leave that ugly ass hanging out on 9th Avenue.
Resigned, Eve started to pull over, then spotted two hustling beat cops. Pitying them, she kept going.
It's a Christmas miracle, Peabody said reverently.
Why do people do that? Why? Why dress up like an icon, which I don't get anyway? He's a fat guy with a big white beard and a strange red suit who wants kids sitting on his lap. Kids should be afraid, but instead we make him an icon. Then assholes dress up like him and wave their ugly asses at traffic. What do they get out of it?
On a morning like this, a cold, wet ass and a few hours in the drunk tank.
True, but somehow that's not enough. Maybe if they played those poppy jingling Christmas songs on an endless loop in the tank, it would be enough. Maybe.
That has to be against the Geneva Convention.
And still. After parking in the hospital's underground lot, they rode the elevator up to 6. Eve wondered how many sick germs floated around like invisible gnats, just looking for someone to land on.
The woman in the 6th-floor lobby glanced at Eve, nodded in recognition, buzzed her through. Inside, Eve snagged the first nurse she found.
NYPSD, Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody. We need to talk to Natasha Quigley.
She's Dr. Campos. Let me page her, then...
There was a dramatic crash from a nearby room, followed by wailing.
I don't want that slop! I want to go home!
The fun never ends, the nurse said wearily.
Henry, it's Ms. Gibbons again, and you got the short straw.
The nurse took a handheld out of her tunic pocket, keyed in the page.
Can you give us Quigley's status?
I can tell you she had a quiet night and was taken down for tests early this morning. It's better if you speak to Dr. Campo. And there she is. Dr. Campo, the cops are here about Suite 600.
Eve shook hands with a short woman wearing a white tunic over black pants. Her hair sprang out in short, dark curls around a thin, long-jawed face. Her sharp green eyes assessed Eve, then Peabody.
I knew the Icoves, she said in a brisk, no-nonsense tone. Both of them.
Me too, briefly.
Didn't like them. Never did. Like them less now.
That said, our Ms. Quigley is very lucky. Without quick medical intervention, she'd be facing a much harder road, if she'd lived. I don't suppose you want all the medical jargon any more than I want a bunch of cop talk. Comes to a trial, I can give all of that. Now I'll tell you she's lucky. No brain damage, and no reason she shouldn't make a full recovery. Her memory's a little spotty, and she's experiencing occasional double vision, but that's not uncommon in these cases. I'm going to tell you what I expect you already know I'm going to tell you. She's been through a physical and emotional ordeal, requires rest and as much calm as possible. You can talk to her, but keep it brief. If she becomes overly upset, that's it.
Good enough.
Word is, her husband whacked her.
He's in custody.
I had one of those once, a husband. Instead of whacking him, and it was tempting, I divorced him.
The simple reason you're not in custody.
Still wish he was. Okay, this way. We see too much domestic bullshit in here, Campo said as she led them down a wide corridor. Not as much as you, I expect, but plenty. Makes me wonder why people don't need to take a psych test before they get a marriage license.
Campo's demeanor changed from leaning toward irascible to gentle as she walked into 600.
The scent of roses from the huge bouquet across from the bed nearly overpowered the sticky scent of hospital. Natasha lay in the bed, the head lifted to support her in an incline.
Pristine white bandages covered the right side of her head and wrapped around her forehead, but didn't quite cover all the purpling bruising. Her hair lay over her left shoulder in a loose braid. Without enhancement, with the strain of the last hours, she looked older and more delicate. Beside her, Martella sat in a roomy sleep chair, her sister's hand in hers, eyes exhausted.
Doctor, oh, the police already. She's sleeping. She needs to sleep.
Moving slowly, Martella released her sister's hand, rose to walk quietly across the room that more closely resembled a good hotel suite than a hospital.
Can you come back? She's just had all these tests. She's worn out. Lance ran out to get her some Greek yogurt, some berries. You said that was all right.
Yes, that's fine, Campo told her, patted Martella's shoulder as she moved over to study the numbers on the machines. She's stable. Martella, you should get some rest yourself and some food.
I will. But I don't want to leave her until... Della.
Natasha's voice, barely more than a whisper, had Martella rushing back to the bedside.
I'm right here. Don't worry, I'm right here.
Ms. Quigley?
Who is that?
Natasha turned her head. Her right eye showed more bruising and severe swelling from the blow.
Oh, yes. I know you.
Are you up to answering some questions? Eve asked her.
I can try. You don't need to tire yourself, Tosh, Martella began. It's all right. I want to know what happened. It's all so confusing. Katiana? Is Kate really dead? It seems like a terrible dream.
What do you remember?
I was upstairs. I was upset. Still a little upset from when you'd been there before. JJ was home. Yes, that's right. He'd come home. He'd been... Where had he been?
Golfing, Martella reminded her. With Lance.
That's right. Yes. What did we talk about? I'm not sure. I just can't quite remember. Then, I was downstairs. Was I looking for him? I went into the living area and I saw Kate.
Tears blurred her eyes, clogged her voice.
I saw her by the fireplace. There was blood. So much blood. I ran over. Did I scream? I don't know. I ran over. I turned her over, but it was too late. So much blood. And her eyes... Oh, Della!
Shh! Shh! Martella pressed kisses to her sister's hand.
Don't think about it anymore.
You turned her over, Eve persisted.
Yes, I think. It's all so cloudy and in pieces. I think I did, trying to help her. But I think I screamed. In my head was full of screams. I needed to get help. I think I tried to get help. Did I scream for JJ? I think.
Do you remember calling 911?
Yes.
She struggled up a little higher in the bed.
Yes. I called for help. Oh, thank God. I called for help, but...
Her eyes filled with more tears, more confusion, and fear.
Something happened. Something. Someone.
Her free hand lifted to the bandages. Who struck you, Ms. Quigley?
I... The drenched eyes evaded. I can't remember. It's not clear. I can't say because it's not clear. I can't remember. Ms. Quigley, we have the 911 recording. Her gaze darted to Eve, away again. I can't remember. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm tired. Tella, I'm tired.
You have to leave now, Tella said. You have to leave her alone now.
Don't upset yourself, Ms. Quigley.
Dr. Campo moved in.
You did very well. You get some more rest, and I'll be back to check on you later. Lieutenant, Detective, that's all for now.
You don't need to be afraid anymore, Peabody said before they left the room. You're safe now.
In response, Natasha choked out a sob, turned her head away. Unsatisfied, Eve glanced back toward 600.
Why not tell us?
She's lying. She remembers. Why not just tell us?
Confused, conflicted, scared. Here you're trying to save your marriage. You know you've both screwed up, but you're trying to patch it back together. And in one big reveal, you find out your husband's a killer and he tries to kill you. Add in scandal, embarrassment, media frenzy.
Eve added annoyance to dissatisfaction.
What kind of world does she live in where a woman's embarrassed her husband tried to kill her? Where scandal, which is inevitable considering Katiana's in the morgue, weighs over telling the cops. Holy shit, my husband tried to kill me, lock him up and protect me.
An old money world, I guess. They rode back down to the garage.
She's been through a big trauma, and maybe, yeah, she's lying.
But maybe she's also convinced herself she's really not clear, not sure.
She's going to come around when she's steadier.
Either way, Eve shook her head. We keep tabs on her, regular updates on her status. If they even think about the possibility of releasing her, we know about it.
Pretty good bet she's going to spend Christmas in the hospital. At least it's a swank room.
Hospital's a hospital. We hit Copley, because if she doesn't come around, it's going to stick up the works. Let's pull Rio in, get the legal take on worst case, but we hit him and we work him and we tie this up.
But when she walked into the homicide bullpen, Jenkinson hailed her.
Yo, LT! There's a guy waiting in the lounge, Stephen Dorchester. He wants to talk to you. Says he's Katiana Dubois's boyfriend.
Okay, I'll take him, she said to Peabody. Set up the interview, contact Rio. Might as well give Mira the heads up, too.
She stood for a moment, studying a couple fake ears of corn now hanging on the pathetic tree.
Isn't the corn thing Thanksgiving? Why is fake corn hanging on that tree?
For Kwanzaa, Jenkinson told her. Trueheart said it's one of the seven symbols. He looked it up. We're all inclusive in homicide, 'cause whatever your race, color, or creed, you can get dead.
We should write that up under a Merry Christmas sign.
Eve made her way to the lounge with its scatter of tables and vending machines. Someone cursed at one, gave it a punch with the side of his fist. Knowing she wasn't the only one to war with those machines cheered her right up.
She scanned a few cops, a couple talking quietly with civilians, then the man sitting alone, staring down at his own folded hands. She crossed to him. Mr. Dorchester? He looked up at her out of red-rimmed eyes.
Yes, I'm Stephen Dorchester. You're Lieutenant Dallas.
That's right.
I'm very sorry for your loss, Mr. Dorchester.
Stephen, it's Stephen.
I keep thinking I'm going to wake up and it's all going to be a terrible dream. Or it's just some horrible mistake. But
He went back to staring at his hands when Eve sat across from him. Strong face, she thought, though the strain showed. Longish hair, a few reddish streaks through the dark brown, a single silver stud through his right earlobe, a trio of stars inked on the back of his right wrist. Something artistic about him, she thought. Someone good with his hands. She speculated on it, considered he and Katiana would have made an attractive couple, while she waited for him to compose himself and speak.
There's nothing I can do. I'm going over to see your family this morning, be with them. But there's nothing any of us can do. She's gone.
He looked up again. I know there's probably not much you can tell me, but if there's anything... I'm going to be with her family. I can tell you I'll do everything I can to see that the person responsible for taking her from you, from her family, who took her life, is punished to the full extent of the law. There may be something you can do to help.
Anything. I'll do anything.
When did you last see or speak with Katiana?
Yesterday morning, when she left for work.
We went to a party Saturday night, and she stayed at my place. We were going out last night, then going back to my place again. Sort of an early Christmas, just the two of us, because we were going to the parents tonight. Mine, then hers. We were spending Christmas Eve at her mother's, the night, I mean. They have a big deal, so we were staying. And we were going to have our own little Christmas last night, but...
Can you tell me if she was upset about anything? Worried about anything?
No, she was great. We were great.
He reached in his pocket, took out a pretty little box.
I made this for her. I do some silver work, and I made this for her. I was going to give it to her last night.
He opened the box. Inside, a small, intricate key hung on a delicate chain.
It's beautiful work.
It's the symbol, the key. I was going to ask her to move in with me.
We said we were taking it slow, but I wanted her to move in with me, so the key for her.
How did this happen?
When I have all the details, I promise I'll tell you.
Did she talk to you about Trey Ziegler?
Yeah, jerk. That was her word for him. He put some moves on her. She gave him the brush off, so he spread it around. She went for girls. Like if she brushed him off, she didn't go for men. Didn't bother her. Why would it? I went by the gym a couple times, just to give him the needle. Probably shouldn't have.
You talked about his murder.
Yeah. It shook her up some. She didn't like him, but still.
He stroked the key, still in its box, with his finger.
She has a soft heart.
Did she talk to you about who she thought may have killed him?
We played that game. You can't help it, right? And after, when it came out what he did to Tella, and Kate said he did the same with other women, we figured one of them found out and did it. Or one of their husbands or friends, you know. It's why she went to work on Sunday, even though she could have taken the day off. She wanted to be around for Tella.
You didn't talk to her on Sunday, after she left for work?
No. We were supposed to meet at 8 for dinner at this place we like, and she didn't show up. I tried to reach her, but she didn't answer her link. I went by her place, but she wasn't there. I even went to the Schubert's place, but they weren't there either. Then her sister tagged me, and she told me. And everything just stopped. Everything stopped. I don't know if it'll ever start again. Do you want some coffee?
No, thanks, no. I don't think I could swallow anything.
Stephen, can you tell me how she felt about Natasha Quigley, J.J. Copley?
She got along fine with them. She was really tight with Tella, and she and Tella's sister got along fine. She didn't much like the husband. She said he was a little bit of a prick. He smiled a little. She had opinions. She'd help Miss Quigley out now and then. Like for her holiday party. Yeah, like that. I got to go, and it was okay. A little stiff for me, if you know what I mean. But she'd help out like that now and then. With parties, sending out invites or thank yous if Miss Quigley was slammed. She didn't mind. She liked the job.
Okay. I didn't help any.
You did. You've given me a good picture of her. Who she was, how she was. I hope it helps you to know she matters to me. Getting justice for her matters.
Did you ever wish you could turn back the clock? Just one day? His red-rimmed eyes, swimming with tears, bored into hers. Even just a few hours. If I'd said, please, don't go to work today, or hey, I'll go with you, something, it wouldn't have happened. Did you ever wish you could do that? Just turn the clock back?
All the time.
When he left, Eve went into her office to shake off his grief. It wouldn't help in interview.
Knock, knock.
Cher Rio walked in. The pretty blonde with southern roots might have looked delicate, but Eve knew she could be an Amazon in court.
I was in the building, keeping close in case. Give me coffee, and we'll talk to John Jake Copley.
Help yourself. You got the report. No sign of break-in, just him in the house with dead body and unconscious wife. Wife's 911 call that clearly speaks his name. I listened to it myself. With her coffee, Rio walked over, sat in Eve's desk chair.
I'm not sitting in that awful visitor's chair.
You talked to the wife this morning? She's awake, maybe a little confused yet. Eve relayed the gist of the interview.
She won't pull the trigger, Eve finished. Won't confirm Copley struck her.
Could be a little problem.
The 911 recording, oh, we'll use the hell out of it. But if I were his lawyer, I'd use it too. I'd claim the victim was in shock, in fear, was calling for her husband, was then attacked, and this unknown assailant fled. How? The cam clearly shows out a window, into a hidey hole, until he or she could slip out undetected. It's weak, Dallas, and I can promise we'll tear it to shreds, but it could be a little problem. A confession eliminates that little problem. We deal the murder to man one. Bullshit! Listen. Man one on Dubois, assault with intent on the wife. He does 25, no parole. Another 10 concurrent on the wife. Again, if I were his lawyer, I'd take it. Saves a trial, eliminates the possibility of life in a cage. 25 years is a good long time. Katiana Dubois won't get another 25. Nothing we do changes that. But consider how a man like Copley will deal with a quarter of a century in prison. He'd cry and wail and blubber like a little girl, but it wasn't enough. I'll get him on Ziegler, too. If you get him on Ziegler, deal's out. To illustrate, Rio flicked her fingers in the air. That's 2 murders and 1 attempted. Murder 2 on both, but the addition of the knife in the heart? The jury will be appalled, I promise you. But you have to get him, and right now you don't have him. The day's young. You can tag me until 8. After 8, I'm off the clock, and I mean it, until December 26th. Tie him up before that, we'll put a bow on it. Otherwise, have yourself a merry little Christmas. I mean that, too. She rose, patted the bag Eve had given her. I love this.
When she sauntered out, Eve kicked her desk. Man won my ass! She thought of Stephen Dorchester and the key he'd made, put in a pretty little box. Fuck man won. She strode out. Peabody, with me. Let's do this, she said as Peabody scrambled up from her desk. His lawyer's not here.
Then she better hustle.
Eve pushed open the door of Interview B. Dallas, Lieutenant Eve, Peabody, Detective Delia, entering interview with Copley John Jake. I'm not talking to you without my lawyer. Then don't talk. Eve tossed down her files, played the 911 call, hit replay, hit it again. On the third play, he broke just a little. She was calling for me, calling for my help. Anybody who hears it will know that. Really? I heard it. That's not what I know. Peabody?
Didn't sound like that to me. Just the opposite.
Of course, that's just the two of us. We could take a poll, Eve suggested to Peabody. I'm betting people who hear it, like, say, a jury, hear what we hear. Just like they'll hear what we heard when we talked to Natasha this morning.
You talked to her? What did she say?
Eve shook her head. He wants us to answer his questions, Peabody, but he won't answer ours. Doesn't strike me as what you'd call equitable.
I want to know what she said. Does she know I'm in here? In this place? Does she know what you're trying to pull?
He banged both fists on the table, working himself up to another tantrum, Eve thought, and turned casually to Peabody. So, when does your shuttle leave? Peabody smiled. We're catching one at 6 if we can clear things, but we'll catch a later one if we have to. How about you and Rourke? Big dinner out? Quiet evening at home?
You tell me what she said!
Now, JJ, you want to watch that anxiety and blood pressure. My partner and I are just passing the time until your lawyer gets here.
Forget the lawyer! I want to know what Natasha said.
Are you waiving your right to have your legal representative present during interview?
Fine, yes. What did she say to you?
Let the record show Mr. Copley has voluntarily waived said right.
What did she say?
Eve turned straight around to face him, smiled. She said the son of a bitch tried to kill me, lock him up and toss the key.
You're lying. You're a lying bitch.
Now, JJ, you've got to expect her to be a little upset when you bash her in the head when she's spending her Christmas in the hospital.
I never touched her. I never hit her. I was upstairs. I've already told you. I was upstairs. I had the game on. I fell asleep.
Fell asleep? That's a new one. Are you going to keep doing these add-ons? Because I can tell you the story's not getting better.
Oh, I don't know, Dallas.
Peabody bopped her shoulders. You've got to give him a little credit for trying to add some texture to the overall bullshit.
I drifted off, he set his jaw. I played 18 holes, shot a 68. That's 4 under par.
Wow, aren't you special, Peabody commented.
Just shut your mouth, you ignorant twat. Oh, Dallas, he called me a twat. How come you get to be a bitch, but I only get to be a twat?
It's the rank, Eve told her. You'll make bitch one day.
Thanks. That means a lot to me. I'll make you both sorry. I'll make you both pay.
Blah, blah, blah. Eve levered back, smirked at him. Do you want to brag about your golf game, exchange insults, or add more texture to your bullshit story? It's all the same to us.
God damn it! I was upstairs! I heard her scream. It took me a minute, maybe a couple minutes, because I thought maybe it was a dream. I was asleep, a little groggy. I got up, and I called for her, and I ran out. I ran downstairs.
Why downstairs?
Because that's where the scream came from.
If you were asleep, how do you know where it came from?
I just knew!
He slapped both fists on the table. I ran in, and I saw her on the floor, and I saw the other one, Tella's girl.
Tella's girl?
That's right, and I heard something. His eyes flickered away, like somebody running, maybe a door closing.
Seriously? Now there's running footsteps and closing doors?
That's some rich bullshit texture, Peabody put in. You've got to admire it.
Eve snorted out a laugh for form.
Right. So, JJ, why didn't you mention these mysterious running footsteps and closing doors to the responding officer? To me in previous interview, or to any fucking body before this moment?
He swiped beads of sweat from his forehead, more from his upper lip.
I didn't think about it at the time, because I could only think about my wife. I had to help Tosh.
How? Not by calling for help.
I didn't have time. I was in shock. And then the police were at the door, and everything happened so fast. I was upstairs when somebody killed that woman and hurt Tosh. I want to talk to my wife, goddammit. She's confused and scared, and she has to be worried about me.
Her worry? That you'll try to kill her again?
She's done with you, JJ. She's done, Felicity's done, you've got nothing and no one.
You leave Felicity out of it.
To Eve's shock, tears swam into his eyes.
You told her lies about me, didn't you? She left me. You told her lies and she left me. I love her.
Who, your wife or Felicity?
He pulled himself in. Both, in different ways.
The different ways where you tell your wife you've broken it off, and you tell Felicity your wife doesn't understand you?
You don't